This is Angele Kidjo, and you're listening to People Powered Radio, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at www.kpfk.org. Peace and love.
The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett.
Everybody's talking about consciousness. Everybody wants that eternal kiss. Everyone's saying there's more than this. Everyone wants to follow their own bliss. Talking about one love, one blood, we sing.
On the Expansion Zone, we examine life and our quest to understand who and what we are and of the vastness of human potentials. We explore the making of our world from quantum physics to parapsychology, health, sociology, and philosophy, along with practical living. You are reminded of the possibilities in creating personal change. So for an hour, we'll stimulate and expand the mind.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of the Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett. I am your host, Sonia Barrett, and thank you for joining me each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, and wishing you the best that the week has to offer. Looking forward to today's show as well, as I'm always looking forward to Monday shows. As you know, I look for the most interesting content, mind-expanding content, and oftentimes they find me. But anyway, you already know what I'm about. That's why the show is called The Expansion Zone. A quick quote here: never allow waiting to become a habit. Live your dreams and take risks. Life is happening now. And I do believe in doing that. And even with our guests today, the not waiting for life to happen or things to happen, but just saying, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a film, as I've done myself. I'm going to do a documentary. Sometimes we don't know how we're going to get things done, but to take a chance and to just go, I want to do this. And it just finds a way, because life is what? It's always happening. All right. Anyway, that quote was by Paulo Coelho. And today's guest is Darcy Ware. Actually, we are going to be speaking about his documentary, The Psychic Phenomenon. And I elected to interview him because I felt that there was a lot of rich content. And I know what I look for. And not just the maybe same old content, but some other aspects, because, you know, I get into everything, you know, quantum physics, obviously, quantum mechanics, and of course, neuroscience as being a neuroscientist, but how all of those things connect and consciousness and so on. I think that we have to get to a place where we realize that the picture is much bigger, and it's not about just isolating one thing, you know, like in Western medicine, we're going to fix, you know, this over here, but then there's all these other pieces, the other parts of your body that's connected with maybe why you're having a pain in your arm. So it's a holistic look at life in order to have a better understanding, or allow yourself anyway to have a better, a more open, I should say, perspective about what life is, and not about really just trying to confine it to a box. Anyway, so I just read briefly. Darcy Ware is an acclaimed Canadian documentary filmmaker and UAP / UFO researcher who has produced over 20 films and series exploring the unexplained phenomenon, from UFOs and cryptids to secret government programs. His newest film, The Psychic Phenomenon, now streaming on Amazon Prime and Apple TV, dives into the hidden history of remote viewing and psychic research connected to the U.S. military, featuring exclusive insights from pioneers like Russell Targ. Through his work, Darcy blends history, science, and mystery, shining a light on topics often hidden from public view, with films such as Puerto Rico's UAPs, Secret Space UFOs, and the Unwanted Sasquatch. He has become a leading voice in the global disclosure movement dedicated to making these mysteries accessible to the world. Anyway, without further ado, Darcy Ware, welcome to the Expansion Zone.
Sonia, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, I guess we will start out with probably asking, you know, what would be the basic question. You know, as far as what drew you to investigate this psychic phenomenon and their ties to the military, the U.S. military. But maybe we should, maybe like a 2-second, 3-second sort of summary about the film. Maybe we should kind of just do that first.
Yeah. So the film, we interview over 7 different subjects who have been involved with the psychic phenomenon, meaning credible researchers who have tested psychic abilities like remote viewing, extrasensory perception, and channeling, all that sort of thing, you know, just connecting with intelligence outside of your mind. Telepathy is something that's explored. And the whole UFO, UAP connection to that is that many experiencers or contactees that have apparently met with the non-human intelligence or been on board a craft or even seen a craft, a UFO in the sky, often report messages that they're kind of receiving right to their mind. So like a mind-to-mind connection or something like that. And so we're just kind of telling this story and connecting those sort of pieces and asking questions whether we're alone in the universe and if maybe psychic abilities are kind of like a universal language, like never mind using your mouth or typing something with your thumbs or your fingers to send that message. What if you can just receive it right into your brain from a non-human intelligence? And you know, I think what's interesting looking at your work, neuroscience, we do feature somebody we interview in the documentary named Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, who was a part of the telepathy tapes. And, Jeffrey has worked with a number of mediums and, psychics. And what he does from a practical sort of science standpoint, he straps a EEG to their head, you know, those sort of like head nets, and measures brain activity. And one thing that kept coming up is whenever these psychics were doing very accurate readings, you know, either precognitive predictions or, you know, remote viewing or something like that, their occipital lobe on the left side lit up with activity. And so we just explore all of this stuff in the documentary and try to say, you know, is this real?
All right. That's a good summary. That's a great summary to give a person some more curiosity. So, okay, so then we sort of move on to, I know you've done a number of films, but this one, was there something specific about this subject matter in particular that made you say, I've got to take a look at this. I've got to take a deeper look at this and then bring that information to the public, because this is where we are right now. You know, we're in a completely different phase here on the planet.
Yeah, I was actually inspired by two friends, really. I was at a conference and I was speaking and interviewing a lady named Tracy Garbutt Dolan. She's the wife of my other friend, Richard Dolan.
I know who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do? Okay.
Well, we've done, when I used to do more conferences, I've done conferences with him. Yeah.
Oh, great. So, you know, I saw her presentation at the conference and she was talking about quantum computing and relating that to the brain. And maybe the brain is this, you know, people have thrown around that it could be a room temp quantum computer, you know, and that, you know, we affect our world and that there's psychic abilities. So I pulled her aside and interviewed her and we started talking about this idea of, you know, me making a documentary about this. So she connected me with Russell Targ. And I got connected with Paul H. Smith through another friend who has a podcast called Raised by Giants, Ryder Lee.
Actually, I did his show. I was actually a guest on his show a long time ago.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. And then Joe McMonagle, I got his interview from another friend, a fellow Canadian who has his own channel called Area 52 Investigations. He's also a magician. This guy named Chris Ramsey, great actor. And basically, you know, pulled together this story from all this testimony of people that were either trained psychics working for the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, or the CIA at one point, Russell Targ. And then, you know, connected that with testimony and stories of contacts and Ingo Swann's archival information and, you know, some old stuff that he had said and predictions and theories that he had about the UFO or the non-human intelligence phenomenon, you know, what people have referred to in the UFO community in the past as like extraterrestrials.
Right. So that's changed. Yeah. Yeah. I remember quite a bit of that because one time I was a bit more active in that arena. That's good reason in hearing how you actually sort of moved into that zone from listening to what was being said and the fact that it made sense. It had to make some sort of sense to you to decide that you want to do it. Now, let's see. And so once upon a time, these remote viewing programs used to be more top secret CIA projects. You know, what did you actually uncover about, you know, why they were launched and why they were eventually supposedly shut down, at least anyway, to the, you know, what would seem to the public?
Yeah, so Russell Targ ran the remote viewing program, Stargate program, RSI, Stanford's research into it initially. And it was shut down in the early 90s, I believe it was 1991. The official response when press asked why they were shutting it down was that it wasn't effective. But Russell Targ, his son grew to be a man and became a lawyer, and they effectively, successfully sued to have the papers from that program declassified. So, you know, thanks to them, we actually have all the data and information from what they were doing back then, the types of targets they were picking, I mean, they were remote viewing locations on Mars and the moon and all kinds of interesting things. And when they remote viewed that stuff, they saw really strange things like alien structures, non-human places, bases, that type of thing. And I think what's interesting about that is that, you know, you have the official agencies saying it wasn't effective, although they spent millions and millions of dollars to train people and to use it. And in the declassified documents, it shows that it was effective, that they were, these psychics were seeing targets in Russia during the Cold War and drawing the targets to like very near pinpoint accuracy, without knowing what they were before, where, you know, what was supposed to be there. So that's, you know, people like Pat Price, Ingo Swann, Paul H. Smith, Joe McMonagle, these are very successful psychic remote viewers. And I think the reason for having that program in the first place was to have an edge on the intelligence militarily, you know, of your adversary. So you want to see what Russia's doing without flying a spy plane over it and taking pictures and risking a pilot getting shot at when you use a psychic. Nowadays, we do have satellites that can take pictures and such, like with great accuracy, great resolution, but maybe you can only see the outside of the building from above. What if you hired a psychic to look inside the building, look inside of a suitcase or inside of a, you know, Russell Targ tells a story about how Pat Price was able to look into a safe and read the words on a piece of paper that was in there. I mean, that's intelligence that's extremely valuable. And I think when you talk to Paul H. Smith, who's still, he took over Ingo Swann's school of teaching remote viewing and still practices teaching that to new people today, he'll even say that some of his private clients for these remote viewing targets today are intelligence clients. So they say one thing, but then they are still employing that method today.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And they've only gotten, I mean, obviously better at it. I mean, this has been going on for such a long time. I think one of the things that just amazes me is the fact that people have been so programmed and so redirected for such a long time away from things that make absolute sense. I mean, there isn't anything bizarre about this to me at all. And I think when you dig a bit more into the sciences, and again, you know, looking at even, you know, quantum entanglement, when you're able to take this bigger picture look, you see why those things are possible. And you know, even talking about the communication psychically, well, you know, absolutely, because our symbols were at one point our first language. So it wasn't necessarily that we were using vocal cords. We weren't really talking. That's our main, communication. But we're so far removed. Your average person is so far removed and so programmed for a very tiny sliver of life and what is possible. And that's done really for control. You know, the more asleep people are, you know, the more you can do what you do and throw it out as maybe, you know, as fake news. So, you know, it's just, it made it so confusing that people don't know what's real news, what's fake news. And that, you know, it's all so intentional. But anyway, yeah, I'm totally with you on this, as I've been pursuing this stuff for such a long time, for, you know, over 30 years. But yeah, no. So So yeah, no, that is food, you know, food for thought, that they're still doing it and have gotten stronger at it. And let's see, what do I want to ask you around that as well? Okay, so we know that they continue to do this. Okay, let's see. I want to ask you things that the audience might want to know. Okay, so what are some things when doing this film, though, that really may have challenged your own skepticism? Because you seem to be a pretty open person to begin with. But is there anything that you were skeptical about that you changed, you know, your mind on?
Yeah, so I guess I figured that human beings couldn't be psychic initially. And then when I looked into the history of this study, which, you know, in mainstream science, it's labeled parapsychology. Rupert Sheldrake kind of switched my mind on this initially, because he said, you know, if we're talking about non-human intelligence being psychic, his first sort of test of that theory, not aliens, but dogs and cats and stuff like that. He wrote a book, Owners and Their Pets, like Psychic Connections. I can't remember the exact title. But, you know, they carried out all these tests. And for this one owner, this dog had such a strong psychic connection. They would do this controlled experiment where the owner would go to work. And every time the owner had just the intention in their mind that they were going to return home, the dog would get up on camera, go wait by the front door and be ready for them to, you know, receive them within 20 minutes or something. And so what they did to see if the dog had just built a schedule in its mind, that type of thing, they would send the owner to work. And instead of bringing the owner back at 5 p.m., you know, or whenever they usually get off, they would send them back 20 minutes after they first arrived at work, or 10 minutes or an hour or something like that. And every time, like clockwork, the dog would know. They weren't hearing something miles and miles and miles away. They just knew psychically, oh, my owner's coming home. So I think there is that. And then there also is just an instinctive psychic ability that all humans have for survival. Probably something that's just passed down innately. If you ever go to a mall, or you go to, a restaurant, and you start gazing at somebody staring, and their back is almost like completely turned to you, but somehow they know to turn around and look directly in your eyes and connect when you're looking. I think that is something that's also been testable and repeatable as a innate sort of psychic ability, to know when somebody's watching you. Again,
and there's a field. Yeah, there's a field also. I mean, that's the thing. There's a field that extends from us as human beings as well. And then there's vibration, there's frequencies. I mean, you know, it's all these, this soup of interaction, these layers that really allow us to be completely connected all the time, but at the same time separate. So, and, you know, of course, yes, my mind goes in all kinds of different directions without fear. So, so it all just sort of makes sense to me. But yeah, that's a good one for people who are sort of questioning. It's like, how do you say, I don't like that person's vibe? You know, I get a bad vibe from that person. So they'll say that. But then if you say something else, like what you're talking about, oh, that doesn't make any sense. But yet they're living this every day. Why? Because that's part of the design.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a working theory that we are a field, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Affecting other fields.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, you know, to extend that, answering your question even more, where it goes to like, how did my mind change more, that we could be even more psychic than just the innate stuff, and connecting with other non-human intelligence on our own planet. If you look at Ed May's work, who kind of took over for SRI after Russell Targ left, you know, he said that remote viewers that were highly capable were 90% effective when it came to their statistics of what they were looking at and predicting properly psychically and illustrating it. And on top of that, you know, people would ask, well, can anybody become a really, really powerful remote viewer? And I think the answer is no, because there are just certain people that are highly gifted that are innately very capable of remote viewing above others. So some people's fields are stronger, let's say. And an example of that from the past are people like Pat Price and Ingo Swann, very, very powerful psychics that were, you know, we documented evidence of their exploits and completing their psychic abilities through their remote viewing projects. But Ed May would state, you're only ever going to train up to your actual innate ability. So maybe you're just not actually aware of how psychic you are. So you could go through remote viewing training. You could go to the Monroe Institute and learn how to do these things, and then be so aware that you're effectively up to your full potential. But everybody's potential is a little bit different.
Yeah, no, that does make sense in terms of what you were sharing about just the animals as well. And it's like the idea of being a genius, or the idea of excelling at mathematics. You know, you might be brilliant in something else, you know, English or whatever, but when it comes to math, your brain just doesn't seem to be wired to just easily process and pick up mathematical formulas and, you know, calculations and so on. So yes, I do think there's something to it. I think that, yes, people have to work extra hard to become better or stronger at something that might not be innately, you know, a skill. They weren't necessarily born with that ability, but they all have an aspect, a bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for yourself, what did you experiment? Did you find for yourself anything that connected you to some abilities with remote viewing?
I have not practiced remote viewing. That's something I might do in another sort of boots on the ground doc that I produce in the future, but
you don't have the time. You're busy.
Yeah, I don't have the time. Got a kid now, but I definitely think that sometimes I feel like there's a bit of a precognitive ability for myself. There are things that I've in the past been intuitive about, and they've manifested. And I think even creativity to some degree is a psychic ability, right? You know where to go and who to work with to complete a story. And that sort of knowing, that gnosis ability, is sometimes what just makes people more successful in certain things. I think everybody kind of has that to a certain degree. And, you know, you look at somebody like Dr. Oppenheimer in the past, and just like the idea of how he conceptualized building that atomic bomb, those atomic bombs. If you watch the film Oppenheimer, I almost kind of see what hit the opening sequence of the film where he's kind of going through these night terrors.
Right, right. And then being driven.
He's visualizing what could be in the atomic field and all of that stuff. It almost seems like he was a remote viewer. He was kind of having these precognitive or almost psychic sessions.
And, right.
Anticipating and then he knew where to go to eventually manifest that in reality. Not that creating a extreme weapon is
no, good. But he was sort of driven by this. I know exactly what you're saying. So yeah, you're not saying whether it was good or bad, but you're seeing exactly how this person was being driven by these visions that that he was accessing. Obviously some future perspective of it, of himself, you know, and that's a whole other conversation, but it's like it had already been done and he was living the journey of that would lead up to it. So, yeah.
And I mean, like I asked Russell Targ in the film, do you think, if there's a non-human intelligence out there in the universe or in, you know, the galaxy, if they came to our planet and they were much higher intelligence, you know, much more capable in with their thinking than we are, should they also have the ability of possibly being psychic, kind of like the animals or the humans here on Earth to a certain degree? And he said, based off of, you know, his research, the signs of higher prodigious intelligence usually show higher signs of the ability to be psychic. So Oppenheimer had very high intelligence, right? He was a genius. If you look at somebody like Pat Price, one of his famous remote viewers in his program, Pat Price was a police commissioner. So he was a very high ranking, you know, lawman, and he was solving all these cases, like finding murder suspects quickly and bank robbers and all that kind of stuff. And people wondered why he was just so capable. And it was that he was tapping this psychic ability innately before he went into the program. He was also just very intelligent. And, you know, Chris Ramsey, this guy that.
So now we have to stick a pin in that, and we're going to have to go to our quick station break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Darcy Ware. It's a very interesting conversation. So many components to it, so many parts to this. So please stay tuned and we'll be right back after this brief break.
Not only are KPFK listeners smart, interesting, and forward-thinking, you're also very generous and deeply appreciated. Thank you so much for pledging your support to KPFK during our fund drive.
And we are back. Of course, we are coming to you from KPFK 90.7 FM in Southern California and streaming live at kpfk.org. You are listening to The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett, and that's me. And my guest today is Darcy Ware, producer of the documentary, The Psychic Phenomenon. And Darcy, sorry, I had to cut you off right there because you were saying something very interesting. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah. We were just talking about the connection between higher intelligence ability to psychic abilities here, right? That's been tested. And when I asked Russell Targ the question of whether a non-human intelligence that was higher intelligence than us, if they could possibly be capable of psychic abilities, he basically said yes. And what I was going to say is that he interviews in his YouTube documentary called How the CIA Spent Millions on Psychic Spies, a friend of his named Nelson Dellis. And Nelson Dellis is actually the five-time U.S. memory champion. So there's something there where this guy is very intelligent and capable with his memory, but he also is able to do very effective remote viewing sessions. And interestingly enough, after he had completed, you know, winning these awards for these memory competitions, he was approached by the CIA to learn how to remote view. So it would seem that even the CIA and other intelligence agencies, they recognize high intelligence and they see that as an asset for their own exploits. And they know that if they can find people that are like that, they might also make a really good candidate as a psychic spy. Which also, in my opinion, proves that they never gave up on remote viewing. And one other thing that Russell Targ told me, it's not featured in the documentary, but this is just a side story. I mean, I asked him if he thinks the CIA stopped using remote viewing after 1991. He said, well, before we finished the program, before they canned it, they sent over two CIA agents, a man and a woman, and they were highly psychic and they were very, very well trained and basically copied the whole program protocols and learned everything and documented it. So it's kind of safe to say that CIA probably took that in-house and didn't want it public anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many folks filtered into so many different areas, you know, corporations, you know, religious movements, new age movements. I mean, we could go on and on, but I think what people, many people, I think, have a hard time believing is that those systems are more involved in science than they could imagine. And it's a level of science that is way beyond the your average person's ability to even conceive. And that science is really about the human. What the human is capable of. I mean, I studied neuroscience because of my own curiosity and realizing that the brain is an interface system. And they know that the technology, this is the greatest technology, this human body. This is the greatest technology. And if you can, the stronger they are, the more empowered those systems that rule are in understanding how the human brain works. They have a better handle on how to manage everyone. I don't think people really understand that. So you've got the greatest technology right up there on your shoulders, right? Right in there, in your head. That's not really in your head, but it is. I'll leave it at that. But yeah, that's, you know, so that's why when, you know, when I looked at your information, I saw that you were looking at other aspects, not just the that phenomenon, you know, about whether they're aliens or not, because that's really not the greatest part of this. The greatest part of this is, you know, is you and the communication and these other components. So this is really great. Great conversation here. There is a series that I watched. At first, I wasn't sure it was going to be great. Maybe you're familiar. It's called The Institute. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Yeah, The Institute on Amazon. And
is it a drama?
It's a sci-fi series. And
oh, cool.
It's basically about what you're talking about. The difference is, it's the kids. They're using the kids. And the series, I mean, they bring in a lot of real stuff, true stuff. And the only reason why I know is because, you know, I've been around with dealing with this stuff for such a long time. And they show that, you know, started back in, I think, the 40s, that they were doing this. But they were getting these kids to not just, this was not just about remote viewing. This was remote viewing plus the ability to actually affect matter, right?
Right.
From with their, you know, with their minds, being able to move them into a certain space. Well, and it's anyway, their brain waves, to move them into that space, to train them to be able to do that, that they can not only just view things, but they can actually go in and they actually are able to move things and destroy if they wanted them to do that. So these things are they're written. It's a Stephen King series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Stephen King.
I think Stephen King's probably done his research then.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, even the Russians had their whole psychic program and people mm-hmm. were testing out the ability to remotely kill people, you know, stop hearts and stuff with psychic energies. So it's, I mean, who knows? I don't know if it was effective, but I think that sometimes science fiction is inspired by some kind of science fact or history, or maybe vice versa. You know,
absolutely,
a fiction can inspire a scientist to go and try an experiment.
Yeah, and I know, and then that's where the fine line is, you know, between what's real, what's possible, what's fiction. There's just so many factors here, but this film definitely had a lot of realism to it because of all the information that we heard over the years of, and me talking to other people that were kids years back that have memories of some of these things. Now, I don't know if you've gone to Mount Shasta either, but Mount Shasta is another interesting zone. You've heard of that, right? Up there.
I've been to Mount Shasta. Well, I've been to like the base in 2022. I was in Redding, California, and then drove up to the Masonic Lodge. That's the sort of dance hall that's in that town close by.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, people allege that it's kind of a paranormal place.
It definitely is. I mean, I will say that there's lots of gateways up there. And, you know, again, folks, it's, you know, you've heard me talk to Peter Moon and a bunch of other people. And yeah, there's just gateways all over the place. It's just different, you know, different areas. But yeah, Mount Shasta, having experienced and seen some of these things in Shasta myself, going deep into the forest of Mount Shasta with a guide at the time. Yeah, there's a lot going on right here. Cool. You don't have to go anywhere to find it. There's a lot going on. Now, what else would you say that we haven't talked about yet that you want to share with the film? I noticed Thomas Jane is in there as well.
Yeah, Thomas Jane is just a remarkable human being. Gave me his time to share his thoughts on where we're headed with sort of technology and relating that to basically, you know, the future of society and maybe telepathy and how remote viewing might be more common, more standard in the future or something, if this becomes a better known protocol. And then his theory on the UFO and UAP sort of phenomenon. And he's a firm believer. In fact, he is an experiencer. So that's not my story to tell. I think he's going to tell that at a certain time in the future more and more. I think he's also writing about it. But there's just an interest from all walks of life in the psychic side of things, the UAP, UFO side of things. Everybody wants to know if we're alone in the universe, right? No one wants to think that we're just the only intelligent life that's floating around a star in our galaxy.
That would just suck really, really bad, especially when you use the word intelligent.
Yeah. Sometimes we don't feel that right, do you? Yeah.
I know. It's like, oh my gosh, this is it right here? No, this can't. Yeah. But that would be great, because the technology, I was going to say, in doing this film and talking to, you know, many of these people and maybe what you've seen, and the rise in technology at this time, that's not going to be stopping. It's going to continue to become more and more and more. I was going to say, how did you see how that dovetails into this?
Well, I think we're in the wild west of AI right now, and things could get very bad. Things could get very good. I'm not a doomer. I think that there's potential to use AI to conquer our solar system, the stars, you know, become better human beings and do things that empower us and make us, you know, feel more confident. But then, you know, obviously it can be weaponized and it can be used by
like everything else.
It can be, you know, effectively a tool to enslave humanity. So there's like two paths, but I think that what will happen, just like any technology that comes our way, there will be problems. We'll learn from those problems. We'll rise above it. We'll become better from it. And that's the best outcome that we can sort of aim for. You know, and I think also with the advent of this technology and how it's going to change our lives, there's going to be pushback from people that realize we're also not looking in anymore. We're just connecting up with technology and we're looking out, and we're never harnessing our innate abilities like psychic abilities and all that through meditation and protocols and practices that have been performed for decades without the use of AI and cybernetic enhancements and stuff, right? So I think there will be the ability, if you push back on going, you know, head first into those technologies, to practice looking inward, to practice harnessing your own abilities, and to also leverage the technologies. So you move lockstep. You think about how you're treating the planet, how you're treating yourself and others. You're moving, you know, one step forward that way, and then you're also with the other step using technology to make a better step forward and not become a slave to the system.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer, because it has the potential to go both either way, or both ways, you know, simultaneously. You know, you always have some that are going to do something for good, and then some that, you know, that are not. So, but I think, yes, you're right. AI can be a wonderful tool, but like everything else, how do you use it? There's a way to utilize it so that you don't lose your own power and ability. And they're showing that, you know, with MRIs, with the brain and the language center and memory, if people become so accustomed to going, here, you think for me, you don't use it, you lose it. So, yes. So there's a way to use that. And with what, if indeed what people are talking about, which was what your film is talking about, like you said, people want to know, is there life out there? If indeed, obviously, yes, I do know that there, believe that there is. If indeed that's the case, are you ready to possibly encounter beings with higher technology? Because that, tell you, that's what's going to separate us more than anything else, is the technology.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, there's fear of that sort of encounter, but there's also opportunity and wonder, right? And I think you kind of get to step outside of that box once you finally have that opportunity and realize we're not alone, right? Realize that, you know, probably the universe is teeming with life that's not us. So I would be excited for the opportunity, but also careful. I think that's basically my answer to that question.
And again, you did say before, encouraging people to explore more deeply inside themselves, meditation and those things, those tools, because that is what we need, that's going to grow us as human beings and enhance our abilities. So the fear could possibly then be reduced. Maybe you become a bit more equal to a more advanced technology. I mean, I think there's all kinds of factors here, but I think it is a time of tuning into oneself and learning about oneself and finding these, connecting with these methods to expand our mind, expand our ability. Now, before I go any further, I want to make sure that you give out any information that you would like to, in terms of where people can see the film. If there's a book, please tell us, and any other talks or anything that you want to share in terms of this production.
Sure. So if people want to see any of my previous work or this new film, it's available on Amazon Prime, and you can just search The Psychic Phenomenon or my name, Darcy Weir, and a whole catalog of my previous films will come up with this. My website, which is a studio site that you can click on the poster, it'll go right through to a site most often that you can watch one of my films for free, previous films, and you can watch the trailer, read about what I studied in those documentaries. The website is occult, O-C-C-U-L-T, journeys.com. And I go by the same name on my YouTube channel. I've got a documentary for free on there called Puerto Rico's UAP. I also have my trailers and stuff up there, some other previous streams and stuff I've done. And on Twitter, same name, at Occult Journeys, and then Darcy Weir Films on Instagram. I'm down to chat and connect if you ever want to reach out.
Very awesome. Now, I have a question that I want to ask. Now that you are a dad, is there, with this great exposure, with all of these different levels of reality and understanding reality, is there anything you think maybe it encouraged you maybe to raise your son with a different level of awareness? Is there anything you think that of this that is in going to influence how you help him to navigate life?
Yeah, I think just being mindful and aware of what his natural abilities are and what his interests are, and push him towards those and let him harness his full potential there. Teaching him about mindfulness and fringe theories and opportunities to look for creativity and an impact on the world outside of the mainstream, which is, you know, go work for a corporation 9 to 5 and punch in, punch out, you know, all that sort of stuff, which is fine. everybody's got to do some kind of work in this world.
Right.
But yeah, I think just pass on what I've learned from the Fringe and make sure that he's able to have a full potential sort of life.
Yeah. Well, that's all you can do, and support his passion, support his passion. I imagine when you have done a series of films, especially ones like this that are sort of really opening the mind, it is definitely going to encourage you to encourage your child to be more open, and you also being more accommodating and supportive of your child's interests instead of trying to, box him into one little direction of what you want him to be. But I think it can only strengthen, you know, how the growing up experience that you give him.
So, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we have just a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you think that we haven't touched on? Do you go and you do any talks anywhere, just in case anybody's?
Yeah, I'm going to be showing a film and speaking at a conference in Eastern Canada at the Shag Harbor incident. So if people are listening to your show and they're from the Eastern United States, they want to travel up there or Eastern Canada, that'd be cool to meet up. That's the last conference of the year for me. That's in October.
Oh, okay. All right. Good.
I've been to Contact in the Desert. I've been to, UFO Con in San Francisco.
Right. Yeah.
Many different conferences throughout the years.
Okay. I remember I used to do UFO Con a long time ago when that was the main one, many years ago. It was
Benton puts that one on. Yep.
It was a really, really great conference and a number of other ones. And anything else that I want to ask you? There's something else. There's always something else. And then I start talking and then it sort of slips my mind. Oh, have you encountered anybody who is just an absolute skeptic? And it's just completely shut off, shut down. Have you encountered anybody like that?
Yeah, I've worked with one named Kari Lindsay, who does kind of produces for a guy named Stephen Cambion, who has a show called Truth Seekers on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And they like to debunk. That's what they live for. I like to see both sides to stories like this. If there is something that's debunkable, it's better that it is debunked so that it doesn't pervade the mainstream conversation and take over the conversation when something that's true should be more talked about, right?
Good point.
Yeah. So skeptics are welcome.
I like that. Bring it on, skeptics. Yeah, because what you're providing is you're saying, like, this is what we've done. This is what's documented. And I think that there is, to a point, there are people who are skeptical to a point where they don't allow themselves to see something that's right in front of them because they just want to be right. So I've definitely seen, that as well. And if that's the way that person is, then that's fine. But yes, I've definitely seen where we can go too far with that. Oh, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. You were saying?
Totally. Yeah, oh. I agree.
All right. So I think that we can bring it to a close here now. It's certainly been wonderful chatting with you. And did we give a website? Or I think you did.
Yeah. Yeah. Occultjourneys.com. Again, Sonia, thank you for having me. It's great to talk with you about my recent research and always happy to chat with you in the future. Hope everybody out there that's listening is doing well.
Thank you so, so much for being here. Appreciate it. All right. To the listening audience, thank you so much for tuning in, as always. And do please visit theexpansionzone.com.